in brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power, oranges lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal, yellows scare, and green ones dare. That sci-fi love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation.
Jim
and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi everyone, I'm Mark Marble.
And I'm Jim Ford.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 602, or should I say episode 626?
I'm sure much like comic book companies, we can finagle the legacy numbering enough to make it really be episode 626.
I mean, yeah, there is probably a way that we could just include certain non-numbered episodes to make 626.
Yeah, that is true.
Why would 626 be appropriate, Mark? What are we discussing tonight?
Well, Mission Impossible, of course. No. No, we're going to be talking about, and yes, clearly there's spoilers here because you cannot talk about the remake of Lilo and Stitch without referencing what's different between this and the original. So by proxy, there's going to be spoilers about it, even if you didn't want to. There's no way, I think, you could, since this is not an original movie, that you have to reference how it compares to the original, which means things that are the same and things that are different are coming up. Will have to come up in conversation. But yes, this will be a relatively timely discussion on the live action remake of Lilo and Stitch, which is currently kicking Tom Cruise right in the nads. Payback, 22 years of payback for when Minority Report just clipped the original Lilo and Stitch at the wire by like 0.1 decimal point, $0.1 million on opening weekend. And now 22 years later, Stitch gets the ultimate revenge. revenge is a dish best served Stitch.
You think Chris Sanders is sending a bouquet of roses to Tom Cruise?
and it's an even bigger double whammy. It's like karma times two, because Lilo and Stitch apparently is primed to have the biggest Memorial Day weekend ever, which will knock Top Gun Maverick out of that spot. So Tom Cruise takes it twice. Revenge.
Oh boy.
As well it should be. So yes, it's not a surprise that this movie is doing well at the box office, even though I guess it's doing a little better than even most people had projected it was going to do. As we speak, we're recording this technically on the Saturday of the opening weekend, which is really, really, really timely.
Yeah, we're in the midst of it.
I know. We are in the midst of it so much that we don't know how much money this movie is going to make yet, because we haven't even gotten to Sunday to see if they have revised what the three-day estimate is going to be. Right now, the three-day was supposed to be somewhere between 142, I believe, and 145. And the four-day, once Memorial Day rolls around, is supposed to be like between a total of 175 to 180. So if it overperforms on Sunday afternoon and Monday, it could be a lot higher, and it's doing very well, and it's overperforming overseas too. So as I mentioned to Jim earlier, the odds are very strong that by the time if it hasn't done it already, by the time we get to Tuesday, by the time we get to the first full week of release, that the remake of Lilo and Stitch will have made more money in its first week than the entirety of the original Lilo and Stitch's theatrical run, because it only made like about $273 million. On like an $80 million budget. So it was a moderate success. It wasn't a huge success, the original. Should have been.
Big enough success to launch multiple spin-off movies and TV shows.
And billions upon billions upon billions of Stitch merchandise for Disney over the last 23 years.
Yeah, so, that's, you know, it's crazy how it wasn't that huge of a movie when it came out. And yet the merchandise for Stitch has, I mean, it's got to be one of the absolute top sellers for Disney.
certainly if you look at just the last 20-something years. I mean, but yeah, they literally may have made billions upon billions on Stitch merchandise alone, just easily over the last 23 years. And it's funny, like you said, and it's kind of like a good way to ease into this, that Lilo and Stitch, on some levels, as much as I hold the first movie on this pedestal, and I think it should because it's almost a perfect movie, the original, I wished the box office success of that movie was what this movie's probably going to be. However, I can live with it because that is the building block, the foundation. Without the reverence people hold the original movie in now, this movie would not be making the money that it's making. So I can live with it. It's like, again, it's karma. It's like it should have happened the first time, but it didn't. But it is happening now, and like you said, Lilo and Stitch, the success of Lilo and Stitch as overall, as a brand, is not, it's not a cult class. It's not like a cult following, a cult classic, because those movies pretty much mean, when you hear that terminology, like a movie's like a cult classic, that's usually code word for, it didn't make jack at the box office when it first came out. People found it on TV, and it has a really small but rabid fan base, which always means when they release, make sequels or revisit these movies like Anchorman 2, Zoolander 2, Blade Runner 2049, and even Tron, for what it's worth. Tron Legacy didn't make a whole lot either in the big picture. But these movies almost always fail because the first movie didn't make any money. That's not what this is. I was thinking about this today. This is more like how TV shows back in the day, more than now because of streaming, how TV shows sometimes weren't huge hits when they were first on, but once they got to syndication, that's when they developed an audience and they took on a life of its own and the brand built and or survived. Like The Honeymooners. The Honeymooners only has like 39 real episodes. That show has been on the air for 70 years. Now, is it high quality? Yes. But the point is, if not for syndication, it wouldn't matter if it was high quality. We would never know about it. It's like, so Twilight Zone the same way. Twilight Zone has survived all this time because of how good it is, but also because it's been like you and I, like we probably even when you were a kid, you were able to see some of these episodes on like WPIX and stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And they used before everything was associated with networks, that the whole evening programming, once you got past the evening news, was like all movies and syndicated. That's how I watched Three Stooges for the first time. And that's well of how I fell in love with The Odd Couple. The Odd Couple is a classic example of a TV show that was a moderate hit when it first was on ABC. But after it went to syndication, which I believe it was Jack Klugman who predicted that to Tony Randall's, like, people are going to find us in syndication. That show became like legendary because of its writing and how funny it was after it was off the air. That's kind of what Lilo and Stitch became. People found it after its theatrical release. And people really loved it. It built a really solid fan base. Yes, there was a TV show. There were follow-up movies, none of which were that good, and it deserved – and it always bothered me it never got a theatrical sequel because it definitely deserved a theatrical sequel. But between the merchandising, between the love of the original movie, it set the stage for one of the few live-action remakes that not only is going to make them a crap ton of money, but people actually like. mm-hmm. Now – that being said, I must admit, this is a tough movie for me to review because I always try to be objective about stuff. But again, because I hold the original in such high regard, I have to. It's like, how do you judge whether this movie is good or not by my standard? So I look at it from more like, it's really easy to say, well, even though they did take out a lot of this movie, and we're going to talk about that too, what's in it versus what's not in it.
Right.
But did the parts that they keep, some of the stuff that they keep, did it make me cry like the original did? And it's like, yeah, it made me tear up. But I can't say, but that's also because it's still striking the nerve that's already there and just kind of re-exposing it, maybe. So I don't know if that's the litmus test. To me, objectively, I think this movie probably is inferior in every single way compared to the original. But as Stitch would say, it's still good. I think it's worth seeing. It just doesn't come close to the original, but they didn't completely strip out everything that made the original special. They kept in maybe 60-70%, but that's enough because that story was so strong, it still works. So I think you might like it more than I do, but I think it's good. I would recommend it. Do I think you have to see it in the theater, honestly, versus waiting for Disney Plus? No. But I'm not going to say don't go see it, because, again, to me, this is karma, because I want this movie to make as much money as the first one should have.
I think that it's definitely different enough to warrant going to see. It's definitely has a lot of that stuff that is from the original, which, as you said, is kind of a perfect movie. And this, I mean, obviously, I'm saying the obvious, but it's in a different format and it's live action, and you see more expression. They work harder to convey more emotion in this, I think. Not that the original didn't, but I think that there's a lot more in this one that kind of plays on your heartstrings. And while I would say that that might be a critique that I have of certain like Pixar films, where they just put in dog whistles that are just there to get you to cry. And it's like not always like an earned cry. It's just like, okay, well, we know the shortcuts to get you to cry. And we know that if you cry, then you're going to remember this movie more. And I think that they do that too often to their detriment. Whereas with this, it feels genuine. It feels earned. To me, I felt that it had a little bit more emotional impact, the relationship that Nani had with Lilo. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. I don't agree, but I don't know. I know what you're saying.
They definitely, I think in the live action one, they play up the fact that the struggle for them, it's tougher, and it's not handled as easily as it is in the cartoon. Not that it was handled easily, but there was kind of an easier solution in the cartoon as opposed to the real one, where it's like, okay, well, it's not a cartoon. This is real life, and it's not always going to be that simple. Now, it's going to be kind of simple because it is a kids movie, but I don't know. I feel like the stakes are raised for them staying together in the live action version.
Again, I'm not going to say I disagree as much on that point. Mm-hmm. That's more of a middle ground for me. I see your point, and I think that's more, I could kind of get on board a little bit more with that. Then I think my big issue with the movie is that they really strip away a lot of Stitch's story. And by choosing what they kept in, cutting out the whole ugly duckling stuff, mm-hmm. is moronic. Because it's literally the core of Stitch's story. The reason why that book and that story resonates with him so much is that's exactly what he is. I mean, arguably the saddest part of the original Lilo and Stitch is when he goes into the forest by himself and he just starts crying that he's lost. This movie's like 20 minutes longer than the original. So I don't know why they felt compelled to strip so much of the original stuff out. They could have kept literally all of it in and just add more stuff. They didn't have to take, I mean, they stripped out almost all the Elvis stuff as far as the significance of Elvis to Lilo. They have a couple of references, and they have the cool little trailer reference when Stitch can play the music out of his mouth as a speaker. which I was not honestly expecting. I thought that was cool. Of course, Nani didn't even pay attention to it. But I don't know. I think they stripped up. I think this is why I disagree with your part. The original Lilo and Stitch, part of why it works is that it works on every single emotional level, but it's really, at its core, very, very sad till you get to the end. They're all broken characters. That's the point. Everybody's broken, which is why when they literally form the group at the end, the core four, if you will, along with, you know, Cobra and Pleakley and Jumba, and we're going to talk about Jumba. The reality is that fits, and almost everybody kind of has a little redemption story along the way too, and they take out a lot of that in this. It's not all gone. But they kind of water it down by adding in some characters that don't need to be in. They change a whole bunch of characters. Let's just do Jumba right now, because that's an abomination. Galifianakis is absolutely horribly miscast in this role.
I agree.
He, Almost every reviewer I've seen talks, even though a lot of the cast gets praised, almost everybody says, except for one, and they talk about Zach Galifianakis, who's first of all, he does not have the voice for the character. We literally went from Charles Emerson Winchester III, David Ogden Stiers, who's dead, so obviously unless they signed a license with him, they can't do his voice again either.
Yeah.
You needed somebody, but he had to have a deeper, more commanding voice. That he did not have that at all. He almost every single time he was on screen, and I don't blame the guy the guy playing Pleakley. Pleakley was close to Pleakley. I'm okay with that. But
That was Billy Magnussen.
Yes, I couldn't pronounce.
And I think that he did a fantastic job. I think that to get a human version of Pleakley, I think that I have no issues with him whatsoever. And I love Zach Galifianakis. Like I love him in so many things that he's done. And this was like the worst cast part in this entire movie, far and away. Because, as you said, he doesn't have the voice, he doesn't have the accent, he doesn't have the physicality of what Jumba should have been. And it was just like, it was like a watered-down version of Jumba.
And he wasn't even funny. The scenes when he's in it, the majority of which has come to a screeching halt when he's on screen is like, our theater wasn't packed when we saw it Thursday, but like almost nobody laughed at any of the lines that he was saying that you thought would be to be fair. Not that many people laughed at that many of the Pleakley stuff either. But the reality is it's because I think Galifianakis was just sucking all the air out of the room. That was an absolutely atrocious casting. And I know some people have tried to excuse it, and whether it's true or not, that, they weren't allowed to improvise because they were making this during the strike. And it's like, it doesn't matter. First of all, he was never should have been given that role. Yeah. And there's certain ways to deliver lines that he could have made even a crappy line at least somewhat amusing. But it's – and of course, it did him no favors by rewriting the story to make Jumba the bad guy. That's another big problem with this. They opted not, and I was just reading an article about this before you and I got on, about how they were trying to justify taking Captain Gantu out of the movie because it just didn't work. It's like, well, you could have done the same thing with him that you did with Pleakley and Jumba, that you only have to show him a few times in his natural state and just have him, looking like a human being. They could have made it work.
Lauren pointed that out. She's like, why? I don't understand why they took him out. And I understand why they took him out because
money, probably.
Well, no, I don't think that it is money. I think that it's the fact that they figured that by taking that character out, it's somewhat money that you can save a whole CGI, whatever, but also by leaving him out, then you give Pleakley and Jumba more to do, which again, Pleakley, no problems. Does a fantastic job, but Jumba, Jumba in the cartoon, he wasn't like a villain, but he was kind of like doing his own thing. So I feel like they definitely made him more of that in the direction of bad guy, but I feel like there's still room to redeem him in the future if they wanted to, or get rid of him completely and recast with somebody better. That would be great.
Again, it changes the trajectory of the story because Jumba is one of the characters that ends up essentially having a redemption arc in the original movie. Plus part of the reason why Pleakley and Jumba are doing what they're doing the way they're doing it is because in the original is because Jumba is literally observing his creation in the wild, and he's actually it's trying to figure out what's making him tick, especially the fact that just point out something else that's different in the movie, same but different. Like in this movie, the live action, Stitch really decides to go. He doesn't like being left out, but the main reason he wants to go surfing or agrees to go surfing is because he sees the water wings, so he realizes he's not going to drown. The original movie that doesn't even factor in, because he just doesn't want, he wants to be part of the family and doesn't want to be left out. And Jumba's watching this going, I don't really understand this, because he's choosing to go into water, knowing the risk of going into water, because how dense he is in water, that he's just going to sink. If he falls in, he's just going to sink and drown. So the fact that he's willingly choosing to go into a dangerous situation just captivates Jumba, because he's trying to figure this out. So it's part of his understanding of what makes Stitch tick. And that's why that's part of what's, I guess, part of his journey in figuring out, you know, what he really made with Stitch. And this movie is like, he doesn't care about any of that, really.
Yeah.
And no, it's, oh, true. We're going to change him to 627. I don't know what, that's just, the third act was pretty weak. It was not the strongest. No. Obviously, the Cobra Bubble stuff didn't really work either.
I didn't have a huge problem with that. I think that my biggest issue with it was that he got real chummy real fast, and it wasn't really earned.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree with that. It was forced from a time frame perspective. It was like, oh, he's gotta jump on Team Nani because the script says that you have to.
Right. Sitting on the couch at the end, and it's like, what?
Yeah.
Really? Like,
yeah, yeah. That's they were clever in the sense that they kind of tied it into, they did the homage back to the fact that he was the social worker to start with. That they did, they kind of, so I did appreciate that, but yes, it's because they chose to just, you know, he was just CIA on track and searching for the alien and things like that, that they just, they took out a lot of the personal relationship there that would have made, again, the turn at the end make more sense. And like in the animated version, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I didn't have an issue with him writing a character for Tia Carrera since she's Nani originally. So I don't have a, I mean, that's cool. That's cool that they did that. Yes. So, I mean, but she didn't necessarily have to be the social worker. They could have done something. They could have, instead of having David have a grandmother, they could have had Tia Carrera be her mother. Be his mother. They could have done something like.
Yeah, but Amy Hill was in the original too.
Was she?
Yes, she was Tutu.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm sorry. She was. Let's see, who was she in the other one? Miss Hasegawa.
Okay, I know, but Tia Carrera. I mean, if you're picking one, Tia Carrera obviously is the one you want to get. you want to fit into the movie for multiple reasons. I don't think she's acting anymore. But I'm kind of surprised they didn't have DeVay Chase have some role in this movie.
I thought the same thing, but I imagine it's because she's not acting.
Yeah, I don't, because we live in 2025, they probably would get on, depending on what character, if she was physically in the movie, not doing just a voice or something, they would say, oh, they're whitewashing Lilo and Stitch. It's like, she was Lilo, you moron. It's like, just like some people are actually complaining, you gotta love woke people complaining that Nani isn't Hawaiian enough. Because I guess she doesn't check enough ethnic boxes, even though she actually is Hawaiian. She doesn't check enough literal ethnic boxes to be Hawaiian enough.
Well, but I thought she was. People just like to stir bitch. Stuff up like that.
People like to complain.
I don't know. I think I would have liked to have seen the Kevin McDonald cameo, but whatever. You know, it is what it is.
It is.
There's plenty of people that didn't cameo in this movie. There's also like, we get to it at some point, but they're already exploring sequels and spinoffs and whatnot from this movie. So I guess you could always bring them in for cameos in the future movies.
Yeah, that is also true. I mean, you think about it. I mean, you think Ving Rhames could have had a cameo. I mean, it's not like Ving Rhames is dead.
Is he? Is he not?
No, he can't be. He was just in the final, and he sees Mission Impossible. Right.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I know you're thinking him. Kilowog there.
There's so many people that I confuse him with, but no, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Looking at the original cast, there's a lot of people they could have actually put in there. They did a good job in the beginning, I would say, doing a pretty faithful recreation of the beginning of the movie when they bring him before the council and he's trapped and he uses a spit to get out because he's smart and stealing the red space cruiser and everything. Yeah. The scenes that they recreated almost beat for beat, they did a pretty good job with.
The one thing that I will add to that, though, is that because the whole intro is CGI, when you get to Earth, it's a little jarring. It's almost like you're in a cartoon and then all of a sudden it's real life. So it's not like I was expecting it to be a cartoon, but just watching that whole beginning part and everybody's CGI, it's like, oh, okay. Oh, that's right. This is a live action movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand. What was the point of changing the sandwich? Why do they have to make it like a sandwich, like with lettuce or whatever on it, as opposed to the peanut butter sandwich? Why the hell would that need to be changed, period? What the hell?
Allergies.
Sadly, you're probably right. You're probably right. They could have had a fish. They could have had Pudge eat the sandwich, blow up, and die. Don't eat peanut butter. That's the moral. No fish were harmed with allergy in this movie. I wish at the end. It kind of bothered me that they didn't have any payoff on the whole mosquito thing. Related to Bubbles, Cobra Bubbles, the whole reason why the council and Pleakley in particular thinks Earth has to be protected because of the endangered species that mosquitoes are, which is just all garbage fed to them because by Cobra Bubbles. That's the whole payoff, and the fact that the Cobra Bubbles and the councilwoman know each other because of Roswell.
And the fact I forgot about that stuff.
Yes, you would hear them. Whatever she says, that it's kind of a payoff to his storyline. It's also the fact it's pretty clever. Shows you how smart he is. That the reason why they won't blow up Earth is because of me. Because of false information. but I did enjoy it. I did. I'm glad, even though I don't think Disney has really ever done well. They really haven't done right by Chris Anders for the most part. But I'm glad Chris Anders came back because he really is Stitch.
Yes.
In every single way, he's Stitch. Obviously, he and DuBois co-created Lilo and Stitch, just like the original How to Treat Your Dragon, which is why Toothless, of course, looks like Stitch. but the reality is, I mean, Chris Anders is a really good filmmaker. I mean, speaking of which, the Wild Robot just went on Netflix, so I'm gonna have to try to watch that because that was another he directed that movie too. But I'm glad he came back because that's the one voice they couldn't afford to really couldn't afford to lose if he had any choice. Obviously because it's live action now. Tia Carrera was on the sidelines, and so would DeVay Chase would have been on the sidelines too, no matter what. Mm-hmm. I did like the casting of Nani. She was really cute.
You know, I liked her. I thought that she did a very good job.
Go ahead, Jim.
The one caveat is, and I mean, yeah, it's horrible to say this, but Nani was so thick. That is how Chris Sanders draws his pinup girls. They're so curvy and in like really well proportioned ways. And this one playing Nani, she was very good looking, but she was not, you know, she did not meet that standard, which is an impossible standard, but I don't know, like it just would have been a little bit cooler if it was closer to that.
I know that's part of the reason why I think another reason why they've been accused of quote unquote whitewashing Nani because of the body type. Hey, they explain in the movie it's a retcon, but they explain in the movie why she would have this, but they did give her some powerful thighs. And they explain it in the movie because of the carrying the rocks carrying the rocks and running with the rocks in the bottom of the ocean floor, which of course at least they do give you a payoff for that, you know, because of the way they retcon. I mean, the whole ending is so changed. I mean, not the very last scenes in the movie. They kind of do as much as they can to keep that in sync with the end of the animated movie and everything else. And when the aliens, you know, when the councilwoman comes to take Stitch away, and that's still, this, you know, kind of a pulling at your heartstrings kind of scene and everything, and makes you tear up. If you cried in the original, you'll probably cry at that scene in this one too. But the whole thing in the ship and the way the ship crashes and, oh, you know, Stitch has to go rescue Lilo from the bottom because she's, because she's trapped, and of course she keeps trying to lift him, and there's no way she can do that because, you know, he's too heavy. Yeah, so I mean, at least they did have the payoff. I mean, of course the logic as all this was going down on screen, it's like, okay, why didn't you just do what you did before, which was, why doesn't she take the surfboard and take Lilo back and David go down and get stitched, because that's what happened the last time. I mean, well, that was the easy solution. I mean, really, yeah. I mean, so that was kind of dumb, but that was done on purpose to give her the, not just the girl boss moment, but do the payoff to the whole thing that, oh yeah, she was, you know, she was this powerful, you know, this surfer, and, you know, she was training and all this stuff, and the whole wanting to be a marine biologist thing kind of came out of left field. I don't have a big issue with it, other than the fact that running off to go to school and leaving her behind kind of isn't the point of the original movie.
Yeah, so. That is kind of one of my big issues with this movie, and it's not a big enough issue to make me not enjoy it, but it was kind of like, Ohana means nobody gets left behind. By the way, I'm going to college now, and I'm leaving you behind with our neighbor. What? And okay, and like we said, full spoilers, they kind of...
cheat.
They lessen the blow because of the fact that they have the portal gun, so she can go right back and visit. Which, okay, then you have the best of both worlds. That's fine. But, you know, like, before you knew that she was going to use the portal gun to go home, and also you know that there was some amount of time that had to pass. Where she's setting up her dorm room and whatnot, where she wasn't going back to let her know that she had the portal gun. Like, it was a surprise in that scene. So did she not have the portal gun and Pleakley sent her the portal gun? Or I don't know. Like, logistics wise, there's questions that I have about that. But yeah, like the whole fact that she decides, you know what? I am going to go back to college. You'll be fine with them. Like, okay, well, she probably would have been fine with them before this movie, and you could have gone to college, and there would be no movie.
Yeah.
But you really didn't need the movie to go on that journey to be like, okay, time to go to college. You got your neighbors like, oh, yeah, don't worry, we're Ohana. And then they go off, and they have a nice dinner while she's cooking awful sliders and other horrible garbage food. It's like, oh, yeah. That's great. We're family. Oh, looks like you're eating something good over there as we waste away to nothing and I can't hold down a job. Like, if that was an option, that was always an option.
I know. I obviously, the movie wants you to believe that sticking in the concept that just because you're dedicated to not just keeping your family together, but looking out for people, other people, that doesn't mean you have to sacrifice your own dreams entirely. And the fact that their parents would have wanted, you know, they were making sacrifices, and they, with the intention of Nani going off to school and everything else. So that ultimately that their parents would have wanted her to go to do that. It's like, you know, screw your sister, go to school. She is a troublemaker anyway, even though, to be fair, that's another aspect of this movie that they changed. Lilo's not really she's always was misunderstood, but in this movie she's more ostracized and being left out. They don't really play up the bad seed angle, which real as much as that was one of the reasons why Stitch and Lilo were drawn to each other, because they both kind of had those tendencies. Like in this movie, like Myrtle just kind of hits her a little bit and then she pushes her off stage. In the original movie, Lilo's driving on her face. She just pounded the hell out of her. And it's like, okay, I'm just going to punch you in the face repeatedly and bite you.
Yeah. I guess the comparison that I would make is that animated Lilo had more agency in her misdeeds. It seems like live action Lilo, she is more a... result of happenstance.
She's just a rascal. It's like, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be doing that, but it's not. You understand in the original why Leela, you know, people kind of look down on her a little bit, only because, understandably so, but she has anger issues. We know why she has anger issues, yeah. But she has anger issues. And that, and again, it's the whole, that's again the whole ugly duckling thing, is that if you're being judged on your outward appearance and not people trying to look underneath and figure out and realize there's more. And that's part of the reason why she and Stitch end up bonding so well together. Plus, it's part of the reason why she tries to straighten him out, which, of course, this movie, there's not much of that.
Okay, so the thing that I was a little bit leery of based on the trailers was how in the cartoon, Pleakley dresses like a woman. Like, he's clearly dressing like a woman. And I always felt like that was kind of a nod to how kids in the hall would very frequently dress as women, and you know, they play the men and the women parts themselves. So that's kind of what I thought was going on back then, and I was wondering how they would handle that now. Because in the trailer, you don't see anything like that. And as you watch the movie, like, they do kind of put in elements of that where live action Pleakley, he has no idea what men's clothes are and what women's clothes are. So he wears these bizarre outfits that frequently have like a women's blouse or something to that effect. And it's not nearly as pronounced as the animated version, but there's enough nods to it without making it like a really big deal that I thought was very funny and well done.
I think overall how they handled Pleakley was pretty good. I mean, it's a fine, you know, you have to walk that line.
Yes.
With Pleakley, especially in live action, for multiple reasons. And figures, even though it is technically it goes back to the source material, you don't want to make it, which is obviously part of it is the over the topness, because the fact that you have these aliens who in the original who clearly look like aliens and just by putting the dress on and putting the hat on and putting the Hawaiian shirt on, it's the ridiculousness of it that makes it work in the animated that would never obviously work in real life. So you have to walk that line, and I think they do a good job with Pleakley. I think obviously, well, we have no Gantu, but if you look at the aliens we have in this movie, not counting Stitch, mm-hmm. I mean, the Councilwoman, pretty much they did her exactly right.
Yeah, that's perfect.
They did that was chef's kiss as far as getting her essence carried over into the live action.
Yeah,
I generally speaking, everything when they were on the ship before Stitch escapes, it's hard to really complain much about.
Yeah,
about that. And Pleakley was good. Obviously, as we said, Jumba is just a big black hole in this movie. If there's one thing that clearly does not work, it's Jumba, which is unfortunate on many levels. Because it also changes the Jumba Stitch relationship too. And I'm not a fan of that, because like we already mentioned, Jumba does have a more than a small redemption arc that occurs and growth from where he begins in that movie. And as he learns about that, not only does he learn to appreciate what Stitch is, it's like, I guess he can take the pride of being like the father of seeing what his creation has become. So it, generally speaking, I did like it. It's just, it's the original is a, the original really is a hard act to follow. So, and I always go back and reference this, because I remember this vividly. This was must have been towards the end of 2002, and it was on some back when they actually had some entertainment shows too, I think, on CNN, back before CNN really went off the cliff on multiple levels and ways. That they were talking to Kevin Smith, and this was pre heart attack, so this was pre I'm gonna cry at the drop of a hat, Kevin Smith. And they were asking him either specifically about the best movie of the year, or I think it was the best movies of the year. And he really championed Lilo and Stitch, because of the fact that it does everything a film's supposed to, or a film can make, the effect that it has on you. You know, it makes you smile, it makes you happy, it makes you sad, it makes you laugh, it makes you cry. It's just mindless entertainment at some moments, but it's also really makes you think about deeper issues because there's a lot of stuff going on in the original movie. As one of the chapters in the making of book refers to, like, Leela, like a little girl with a lot of issues. I think that's the title of it, or with big issues. I think it might be big issues. A little girl with big issues. I think that's what it was. So it's a really high bar to clear this time. So that's why I don't want to be too critical of it, because I do think I would have it's always tough when you literally have the blueprint in front of you how to do this, and they just and I guess it's refreshing to know that it's not just Kevin Feige who follows the if it ain't broke, let's fix it mentality. Yeah. But it's kind of hard when you have you literally have the perfect screenplay in front of you, and it's like, you know what? We're going to take this, and we're going to leave that out, and we're going to stick this in. But all that being said, I do think it definitely was something that I was originally concerned about how they were going to do this movie based on their track record of live action. And I was really concerned because I hold this movie, it holds such a special place in my heart. And I would say, overall, while yes, they could have done a better job capturing the essence of this movie and not cutting certain things out, I still think it's successful enough, and I'm glad it seems like people are enjoying it for what it is. And I think there's room for both. I think you can appreciate this movie for what it is and still understand that, yes, while it's not the original, it still has some value on its own, and it doesn't really take away from the original because it's always there to watch.
I completely agree. The one little reference that I did not pick up on, but my wife Lauren did, was that David wears the hook of Maui around his neck.
Oh, I didn't notice that either.
Yeah, it's a nice little nod.
Which is funny because I was just looking at the picture that The Rock posted about basically having with Stitch literally holding Maui's hook, saying like, basically, it's okay. It's like, you're allowed to do this. So now it's going to be really interesting to see how much this movie makes overall, not just this weekend, but to see how it holds. There's a lot of stuff coming out, but obviously this movie is at the moment, you know, tailor-made for matinees to just keep driving it on the weekends. Considering the audience reaction seems to be pretty strong in favor of it, there's every reason to believe this movie's going to have legs. Actually, the original Lilo and Stitch, I was looking at this, had pretty good, even though, like I said, the opening weekend was only like about 37 or 35. I think it was 35 something million. And it just lost, like I said, to Minority Report. But it actually took like until weekend six, I think, before it dropped below 50%. And then, of course, it rebounded because I remember this vividly, too, because I wanted to take my mom to see Lilo and Stitch. And she kind of was balking, which sometimes my mom does. And it's like I knew she was going to like it. It's like, this movie is a pretty big litmus test for me. It's like, if I show, because there's only one person who I've ever shown this movie to, had never seen it before, who didn't just fall in love with this movie. And like, and that was a pretty important litmus test because like, well, that kind of confirms what I already thought. but we went to go see it on Labor Day, that they re-released, they either re-released it or they expanded it in Labor Day weekend, the last weekend in August in 2002, because I was even looking at the box office, because it jumped up like a, and it confirmed it, because it jumped up like 120% from the weekend before. So that it'll be interesting to see how this does. It'll be interesting to see how this movie ends up ranking in the top movies of the summer, because it obviously has a decent shot to be one of the absolute biggest movies of the summer.
Yeah, it could, but yeah, I don't know, because there's a lot of blockbusters. Like, this is a movie, this is a live action Disney movie that is designed to do very well, but I don't necessarily know that I would look at it as a blockbuster as compared to, like, you know, Fantastic Four, Superman,
Jurassic Park.
Like, with those, if they're not absolutely crushing summer, then people are getting fired and they did something wrong.
But that's also very possible. We're about to enter the range soon where we're going to see some box office tracking numbers soon for all these July movies. I don't think we've seen, there might have been one for Jurassic, there might have been, I don't think so. But there certainly hasn't been any real numbers for Superman or any numbers for Fantastic Four yet. So that's going to be interesting because we don't – because, again, this movie is shaping up, Lilo and Stitch, as we speak, is shaping up. Even 3 Day is going to – it's going to do over, supposed to do over 140. There's absolutely no guarantee that any of the three movies that we just mentioned are even going to come close to – $140 million opening weekend. Jurassic Park has kind of played out to a certain extent. We don't know what the appeal of Superman is, especially based on what happened to the DCEU. Mm-hmm. And obviously Marvel, if you had to bet money, I would absolutely bet the farm that Fantastic Four ain't opening anywhere near $140 million because we have no idea what that movie's going to do. The fact that they're refilming the ending now doesn't really give you a lot of confidence. And delaying the Avengers movies. That's I'd be curious to see
It's fine.
The dumpster meme or the sitting at the bar when everything's on fire. Oh, this is fine. It'll be curious to see if they push Spider-Man back. That's going to be the litmus test because we really don't know how the plot of Spider-Man literally fits in. I mean, we know the movie was supposed to come out between the two Avengers movies, but we don't know where the story actually takes place. So if it's not necessarily if it's not really taking place, which it probably wouldn't, story-wise between the two movies, they might be able to keep it where it is. Because if they don't, then what are you going to do? You're going to have, like, nothing next year?
I had heard that it was definitely going to be taking place between the two movies, and that was going to incorporate, like, a bunch of extra characters from the first movie, or the first Avengers.
From the first Avengers?
Doomsday.
Oh, you mean the first of these two? Okay.
Gotcha.
And I've also heard that it was supposed to take place almost like at the same time as Doomsday, which could explain why, you know, Spider-Man may not have as much of a role in Doomsday as they would like. So that could be one of the reasons why they pushed it back, since we know Tom Holland's schedule is really busy right now. Plus, he's got to film Spider-Man. So they want him in Doomsday. I don't know. It's not surprising they put. I know we're going off in a slight tangent, but I think we're kind of done with Lilo and Stitch. I don't think it's surprising that they pushed it back. It's still disappointing. I mean, you knew logically the movie just literally started filming like within the last month that you were being given like almost barely over a year to finish this movie and to finish the effects on this movie, and they can't afford anything other than a huge hit. And I think they probably are concerned about Fantastic Four. I think they're probably concerned about Fantastic Four. So it's possible. It also could be moving it away from Fantastic Four in case it doesn't work. Knowing Spider-Man will come out next year. So you know that movie's going to at least make a lot of money. People may not like it after they see it, but you know it's the safest thing they could release right now that it's going to make tons of money.
Yeah.
So I could be like hoping that it's almost like a Deadpool and Wolverine palate cleanser to make people forget about 2025. But I kind of think it has more to do with they're struggling with what they're doing in that movie, or they need to, or it's too tight a fit either to shoot, or they're changing things, or I don't know. So I think it's a combination, but it's on paper it doesn't look good no matter what. If it's probably a smart move, you're better off. You're always better off learning from your mistake and adjusting than doubling down on it because you don't want to acknowledge it's a mistake. And Marvel can't afford that at this point because they're not on life support, but they're in intensive care. They might be breathing on their own, but it wouldn't take them much to be on a ventilator right now with the way their universe is going. So if Doomsday does not knock the ball out of the park, and even if it does, I mean, the interest has certainly been so damaged. That's going to be one of the most fascinating things for me. When that movie is about to come out, what the tracking numbers are for that movie, because every Avengers movie other than Ultron has opened up over $200 million. It would not shock me right now if Doomsday opened up under $200 million. saying it will. I'm saying right now, if you told me, what would you think if we told you Avengers Doomsday was going to open up like in the Black Panther range, which I think was Wakanda Forever range, which was like 180, I think, something. I wouldn't be stunned by that because I think they have so much interest they have to try to earn back. The initial numbers might reflect that, even if they can get over the $200 million mark before it gets released.
You're going to have people going because of Doctor Doom. Will that make money? I don't know. Honestly, I think that Fantastic Four is going to tell us everything we need to know. I think that if Fantastic Four does not do really, really well, then it kind of means that Marvel's just dead in the water and they're not going to have any more billion-dollar movies, which isn't the worst thing in the world if they planned accordingly.
Yes.
They don't all need to be $200 million movies.
No,
you can make tons of movies. Like, look at how many movies get made every day that don't have that kind of budget. And you make those movies and you build your reputation again. Because right now it's garbage. It's just garbage. The Thunderbolts is like doing okay and people like it that you convinced to go see it. But it's not the draw that movie should be.
No,
for what they retitled it as. And which is another stupid decision that they made. Like, why would you call it one thing and then say, oh yeah, it's definitely this actually. And then be like, and then walk it back. It's like, oh, we were just joking. When you realize it's like, oh, well, this is like this would be the worst, you know, box office for one of those kinds of movies.
No, I mean, Thunderbolts is performing okay. It's still probably not going to make as much money as Brave New World, though I guess there's a slim chance that it could, because I think it's generally speaking, it's holding better, but it made a lot less, and that comes back to it's like the Guardians 3 problem. It's like Guardians 3 clearly completely overperformed Guardians 2, but that $28 million that opened up behind it was enough where it never made it up. So it could very well be like that. I think Marvel is disappointed. I think they were legitimately surprised Thunderbolts didn't do better. I think they knew Brave New World was. I think they probably were happy considering Brave New World was. They were trying to polish that turd up as best they could. but they knew, much like the Marvels. I mean, obviously did better than Marvels, but I think both projects they knew were kind of DOA. But Fantastic Four, yeah, I tend to agree with you. If Fantastic Four basically is in the same, ends up at the end of the day being the same basic range as Brave New World and Thunderbolts, even if it makes a little bit more. But if we're still talking about a movie that maybe like worldwide makes only like $500 million or between 500 and 550, they have serious issues. And mm-hmm. The only thing that remains is when you have a project, an individual movie, a gimmick movie or an event movie that people are actually interested in, they will go see it, but they don't really care about the MCU as a whole anymore. Which again, you reap what you sow when you don't make things connected anymore enough where people feel like any stories have anything to do with each other anymore. Then you take away part of what made you special. Mm-hmm. That's what happens, and you're in that boat. So will something like if it's true that Spider-Man Brand New Day, it does tie into the multiverse and stuff. That will that help? Sure, it'll help. It'll help some. Doomsday is actually going to, you know, Doomsday is going to make some money because there's an interest in Doctor Doom more than anything. Doctor Doom is driving it because who the hell cares about the majority of the MCU at this point? The main characters they have, they've either nerfed everybody, killed everybody, or given us C-tier characters that now are really C-tier characters. You haven't been able to elevate them. And plus that movie's going to cost so much money. I mean, this movie's probably going to cost like $300 to $400 million, which means you're going to have to make over like $1.2 billion just to pretty much break even sniff a profit. So even if it makes $850 million, which is a successful movie most of the time, for that movie, it might not be. So we'll see. I mean, moving it into December, they moved it because they needed time. That's the reality. I know it's only like 6 or 7 months. It's not like they pushed it back a full year. But the idea, the whole myth that, oh, you release it in December, that's going to be great timing. It's like all the other Avengers movies came out in May or April. They had no problem making tons of money. Just like Star Wars was exclusively a May franchise until Disney said, hey, we're going to release it in December. And again, asterisk, for those who don't remember, Force Awakens was supposed to come out in May, but they pushed it back because under the guise of Harrison Ford's injury, I think, but J.J. Abrams was supposedly petitioning like crazy, I need more time, and they kind of used the injury, I think, as an excuse to buy him those extra five or six months to do what he needed to do. But if a movie's big, if people like your product now, you can open it almost any time, it's going to do well. That's the reality. Look at Minecraft, for God's sake. Not that I saw it. Not that I want to see it. Minecraft made tons of money. What was that? That was like an April release, wasn't it? Or a March release.
I saw that movie.
Did you say you did see it?
I did. I did see that.
Not good?
It's...
What you would expect it to be?
I'm trying to remember. It's barely a movie.
Yeah.
That was my thought. It's like barely a movie. It's a whole bunch of weird, random things that some of them are interesting and some of the visuals are interesting. And I don't dislike the characters, although the main kid, he was pretty just like took up space. He's just his reactions to everything were just like his mouth would be open and he'd stare at it, had a vacant look. And it's like, this is your main character. It's what is this? Listen, my kids enjoyed it. That's fine. I don't need to enjoy every movie. It would have been nice if that was a little bit better, though.
No, I get it. But if people are interested in the movie, though. At this stage of the game, people are going to go whenever it comes out. It's not a detriment releasing in December. We know a lot of big movies, you know, Force Awakens make tons of money in December. We know that the Avatar movies, God help us, they made tons of movies, tons of money coming out in December. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's a bad time to release it. It's right now it's crowded. There's a lot of stuff supposed to come out in December of 2026. So, you know, some stuff's going to move. But look at Final Destination. Look at Bloodlines. May is not exactly, it's not a horrible time to release a horror movie, but it's not prime time. You would think the fall would be the best time to release a big name, heavy franchise horror movie if you want to drive business. But that movie's already almost made more than the highest grossing movies in the franchise. I mean, it's probably going to do that. It's almost guaranteed that at some point it will be the highest grossing franchise, entry in the franchise. And who would have guessed, right? Who would have guessed that movie was going to make as much money as it did? When you first conceived this, oh, we'll release it in May. Why? It's like, okay. But we'll see. But yeah, so at least for Disney for now, at least even if Marvel continues to just sink deeper into the abyss, at least they have one big victory. they can check one box and thank God it's Stitch. If it had to be something, let it be Stitch.
Yes. So now we'll get lots more Stitch movies of varying degrees of quality.
Hopefully some animated, too. Hopefully it's just not all going to be the live stuff because
I wouldn't hold my breath on that one.
I know. I'm hoping. But the reality is, it's kind of funny, though. It's an example of when we're talking about budgets and everything. You know, Lilo and Stitch cost $100 because originally it was going to be a Disney Plus movie. They could obviously have afforded, in retrospect, they could have afforded to spend $150 to $175 easily on this movie and still been and completely be profitable. So it didn't have to. Obviously, it's good. It's a good lesson once again to prove you don't have to have an outrageous budget to have a movie be successful. But
yeah,
so they'll probably learn the wrong lesson. They'll spend $250 on the next one. And
yeah. Well, that would be par for the course for them.
Yeah, it would be like a...
Okie doke.
I think that's it for us, so...
I guess... Oh, you know, there was one other thing that I wanted to mention about the movie, and it's such a small little detail. The guy with the ice.
Oh, they race-swapped him. Nobody
Well, they made him super Hawaiian.
Yeah, but he was just a white tourist the last time.
I just love that he was in there.
I agree too. It was an awesome reference point for.
I thought that he. Oh God! Now I have to look it up.
Feel free, because if I'm wrong, I'd rather correct it now. I'm pretty sure because he's bald. Isn't he bald? Or if he's not bald, he's almost bald. I'm not sure how we find this image.
the ice cream man. Yeah, no, I guess you're right. I guess he is white because you see him with like the tan lines without the shirt on, and he's very pink.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Yeah, I think he's just supposed to be a tourist. Hey, in Disney Wiki, he's actually listed as Ice Cream Man.
Yes, yeah, no, I saw that.
Yeah, he's the ongoing gag. Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew he had shaved ice too. I knew. I knew there was shaved ice somewhere. I remember that too. Other name, Sunburned Ice Cream Tourist. But yeah, and I will, and I at least will acknowledge I did see some people. Again, people are just pointing. I think people are just pointing out hypocrisy, not because they really are up in arms about this, but people were pointing out the hypocrisy. It's like, well, see, here's another example of race swapping.
Yeah, that's not a very good example.
No, it's not. It's not. Because it's a completely, it's not a character that really there was any, was necessarily created to be one color or the other, or there's any relevance to this. But no matter what, yes, it was a, the fact that he's in the movie is a nice reference point. And of course, if you, for people like us, we completely understand. For some, if you never saw the original, it's like, well, okay, that's kind of cute, but what's the point of it? It's like, well, there may not be a real point of it, period, but you know why it's there if you've seen the original. Guy, all the guy wants is some slushy goodness, and he can't get it. Enjoy your life, man.
Yeah. Okie doke.
All right, so lanterncast@gmail.com. Website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, #GLcast. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on, please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think. I think that's it.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
So long.